Michael and I were talking at the break about the problem of money and how the bottom line is the control of the medium of money and who gets to have money. Yes. This is the conspiracy. This is the old way of how to, the old problem of how to liberate money into the new environmental technological situation we can potentially have now. What is controlling money? We know that people are controlled by the thought of money, but what on the human people oligarchical level is controlling banking right now, and what are they going to do with this new fractionalization that's going to happen?
First, a very quick history. Christianity called interest on money loaned as immoral and against God, and that anyone who loaned money at interest had lost their chance at heaven. Since this did not affect the Arabs, had a considerable amount of money and money loaned at interest and had achieved some interesting stabilities in interest rates. But in Europe itself, because of the absence of Arabs, since the Jewish community itself were, of course, according to Christianity, not going to heaven in any event, they were allowed to loan money at interest. This began the large, because they were not allowed to work at any other industry. So therefore, this began the rise of the larger Jewish banking concerns and banking families. Many of the Jewish families joined forces. This did not go unnoticed by the Christian community and oligarchy leadership. So therefore, very quickly, the admonition against loaning money at interest was very quickly dropped. And let us assure you, the Pope was very highly pressured in this. Within the 16th and 17th centuries, but predominantly in the 16th. Now this then caused the rise of the large Christian banking families. And in many ways, the large Christian banking families allowed the continuance of Jewish banking concerns because there would be a profitable interaction between large groups of money and large groups of money. Plus, because of the prevailing thinking, if there were any heat applied, the Jewish concerns would get the first of it and the hardest of it. So therefore, they grew in sizes. Now, many of these Christian banking concerns were formed as certain partnerships, certain organizations, and most, not all, but most, were very secret. The objective, keep a very low profile, use a front organization.
Example of a front organization?
A front organization would be the German banking families.
Like turn in taxes?
To a degree, yes. Yeah.
What about the Freemasons and those well-known secret societies?
They had their own banking concerns.
But you're talking about Christian families.
Christian families.
Are these the nobility?
Not so much the nobility. The nobility would share in it and would be partner, but at a very secret level.
Can you give me an example of a name of a Christian family?
A Christian family would be the what is that? There's the Vogel family.
Vogel.
Yes. The minor banking concerns, most of the highly visible, were Jewish concerns.
Yeah, these Christian names weren't known.
Many of them not.
But they had incredible wealth reservoir.
Incredible wealth. Incredible reservoirs of money. The now the modern offshoot in Italy is the P11.
A P2.
P2.
Yeah, P2 Society. Yeah.
P2P.
Heavily connected to the Pope. Like, this is around the Catholic Church.
Very much so.
So we're talking the Catholic Church in a way.
Yes, but very secret.
The Pope was a front for them then.
In some ways, yeah. Yes. But you realize that what we have here is two concurrencies. The Jewish banking families, the Christian observable banking families, and the hidden secret banking concerns. And the larger of these were the secret concerns, and these were Christian-dominated as a response to that brief history lesson, you see? Now, as that grew, the investments... Now, realize that investing took a turn for in that it was not that a person who would require money would ask for money. Though this would be happening in a certain percentage. The larger percentage would be that the society would look at industries and businesses and selectively choose, selectively fund.
Secret society, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, they would look at an engineering concern and say, let us put money in this. And the owner, a few days later, would find that he is approached by a local banking concern, the front, who are saying that we'd like to invest in your company. So they became investment bankers, you see?
Who became investment bankers?
The secret
grouping, yeah.
The secret grouping. They would invest more than they would loan. Oh, they would request loan upon occasion, but more often they would loan into a concern as an investment. Now, this gave rise to some of the very large steel companies.
Yeah, what timing is this? This is like the 19th century?
Now into the 19th century.
Right.
These businessmen in the secret societies would look at industries and pour money into them.
A license to print kind of thing.
A license to invest. A license to be a part of an ownership. Now, many of these secret societies, in quotes, that have enormous investments in companies. They've invested very heavily in the steel industries in the late 19th century, very heavily in munitions, very heavily, and drew a considerable amount of profit from this. It's not widely known, but much of the funding for the First World War was used by certain of these hidden societies that paid for munitions on both sides.
Now, when you talk secret Christian, are we talking about the Krupp, K-R-U-P-P, or their front?
They're so inextricably within this that it is hard to see where it ends. Because the investment in Krupp was immense. Now, there are certain historians realizing that the funding of munitions on both sides, that what is necessary is a big battle, and that some of the big battles were enjoined strictly to use up ammunition. Strictly to use up munitions.
Like the Battle of Somme and those First World War battles?
Certain of those. These were trench warfare.
Yeah.
Not encirclement. These were static battles.
So the war went on longer than it had to. They made it go long.
When you have an investment in munitions, you want the war to go on as long as possible. Now, it is not exactly true that it happened that way. But there were considerable pressures to extend battles at whatever cost. You see? Not that the secret societies instructed the generals, but that the general idea was to maintain the battles until the munitions had been expended.
Well, did the generals know that?
No, they were brought up to believe that you fought a battle until the last man.
I see.
It was an American general who began to shatter that philosophy when he said, but it is not the objective to go to war to die for your country. The objective is to go to war to make the enemy die for his.
Was that a First World War general?
That was a Second World War, the General Patton.
Yeah.
Now, the First World War was a remarkably good investment for certain of these secret funding.
Is the Knights of Malta a more well-known or a more secret group at that point?
More secret.
All right.
Then the amounts that this group hold are immense.
Knights of Malta?
Yes. Immense.
Are they... LaRouche talks about the concentration of power around Venice, calls the Venice oligarchs. Is that some of the Christian secret groups?
That is the part of the Christian secret groups. Venice, Amsterdam, Frankfurt.
London?
London. But somewhat exclusory to the Americas. They're very strong to Europe, but not as strong in the Americas.
The Rockefellers are Johnny-come-lately.
Very much so.
Yeah.
The Jewish banking concerns that help finance the French Revolution, help finance the American Revolution, these were more open and more more stable than certain of the older secret societies' funding groups.
A name that comes to mind in Italy is the Pallavicini family?
Pallavicini's, they're very reclusive, as you know.
Yeah.
They still hold that being part of this is something that is not to be known. But they are known.
By who?
By people such as yourself who would be able to quote the name.
I didn't hear what your last words were. People like myself?
Who are able to know of the name.
Yeah.
In banking circles, most of these secret groups, mostly uncovered, mostly known. But there is something interesting. There began a shift in the period between the wars in the 30s. Much of the banking system began to change. It changed, and that these societies began to lose their power to governments. Governments began then to have more money than certain of these hidden societies.
McLuhan said that the owners gave up society, or the owners gave up, dropped out in the 20s, the managers took over in the 30s.
Yes.
Advertising took over in the 40s. But the owner thing of giving up in the 20s and managers moving in was a technological effect.
Yes.
Moving into Keynesian and government economics.
Yes. It was this government economics that caused governments to amass large sums of money. Well, the Second World War proved this to an even greater extent. So much of the oligarchy money was overshadowed by government money. Now, the average government, westernized, industrialized government, spends a considerable sum in support payments around the world, support and term it payoff money, term it investment money, term it as you will.
Their network. Support their network.
Yeah, support their network. Now, that, as we say, overtook to an even greater extent the oligarchies.
That's foreign aid, right?
Foreign aid, yes. Now, across the past 10 years, governments are being committed more and more to the sums that they take. In other words, that they would budget their money. And because of vagarities of trade, way things that move, etc., governments do not run at a profit. Well, they have considerable sums to spend, but they do not work at a profit. The hidden societies always worked at a profit, never worked at a loss, always at an investment. So certain of these oligarchies are beginning to rise because they can fund that which governments would not fund.
The technological environment is obsolesced, the temporary boom of the government apparatus.
Yes.
You'd agree with that?
Yes, much so.
Now we're back into the oligarchies. The governments have obsolesced themselves.
Yes.
The situation.
If you look also at a particular interesting phenomenon, the tax-free haven.
Yeah.
The Bermudas.
Hot money.
Not necessarily hot money. Some hot money is totally hidden, i.e. Put into plastic sacks. The plastic sack go into an oil drum. The oil drum is buried. No return on this at all. That is the truly hot money. The warm money, that is to suggest the business that would wish to be incorporated in Liechtenstein or Cayman Islands or whatever. Tax havens. Now, governments do not like tax havens. So therefore, the pressure is on more and more of these tax havens to close down or loopholes closed.
Do the governments know the oligarchy interests are coming up and they want to stop it that way?
They want to stop people hiding money. Now, they understand the cycle. There are very few people, we assure you, very few, who understand the rise of the oligarchy. Very few.
I'm one of them.
There is... At this present time, those that have an interest, those that have the knowledge, approximately 10.
Yeah, you don't mean me. I'm not on that level.
Not on that level. But as far as the knowing level, you possibly 5 more.
Well, the LaRouche people write about it.
But they do not understand the rise of the oligarchy. They do not understand it.
Well, then there's... Now, this gets into Herbert W. Armstrong, who predicts this, the return of the Holy Roman Empire. You know the preacher?
But he's been totally discounted.
Right, but he is actually...
Because he sees this as a rise of religion.
In other words, he sees something rising for the wrong reasons, but he's right about the rise.
He's right about the rise.
I mean, Nelson, my friend Nelson Thal and I... You're saying that I'm one of the 5 people? Or?
5, 6 will begin to take an interest in this. The numbers increase across the next several years. But realize the hiddenness of this. Now, how do you hide money from a government?
I don't know.
You hide it in plain view.
Is that why the Rothschilds went public in 81? Is that what you mean in that sense?
That's one way.
Yeah, you know, they allow the public to join in now.
Exactly. But money skimmed off the top. You see, the government makes no money from printing money. None at all. The government would, if it could, would eliminate currency immediately. Because... With currency, you have a chance to skim off the top.
Yeah. So they would go for a cashless society.
Oh, absolutely.
But the oligarchies are stopping that, right?
Well, most assuredly, yes.
Because they're invested in the old hardware gold stuff.
Exactly.
The old form of wealth.
Exactly.
That's where they got their wealth.
Exactly. But at the same time, gold is becoming the international medium.
Yeah.
More than monies. But what is feared by governments, one side that would wish the currency to go, other side, they fear the electronic travel of money. It is easy enough to skim off electronically.
Yeah, the cashless society is a disservice for their goals to get. It could help the oligarchies.
Exactly. So either way, governments are going to lose.
Yeah. And the oligarchies are going to win.
Absolutely. Now, what do these oligarchies do? They become what they were before, investors. Not available for loans, but investors. And borders mean nothing. Realize that the last tweak of the oligarchies, in truth, was the First World War.
You mean that's the last period of influence?
Last period of influence.
Or a public prestige, you mean?
More influence. A considerable amount of influence lost from the late teens through the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. Only in the last while has the oligarchy began to realize that it's still alive.
You mean the last 5 years?
Yeah, the last five, last, in actuality, the last seven.
And they did not realize that they were going to come back?
They knew, because of their records, that it goes in cycles. But they did not realize how quickly governments would clog up.
Due to the electronic movement of money. They didn't see that effect.
They did not see that effect. But they did not realize how quickly governments would bankrupt themselves.
Which happened about 82. That was really the...
Yes.
The governments collapsed around the world, and also the first strike war stuff.
Exactly.
Ended around then, right?
Yes.
Nuclear war.
Exactly. And this is where Keynesian economics began to fall apart.
Yeah.
Now, the oligarchies now do not care if a border exists. As they learned from the First World War, you can make money on both sides. In that particular time, munitions. Now, what is the equivalent in the 90s? Chemicals. Now, here is the, which would some would say is the kicker out of this, is it makes sense to have an environmentally pure world. Because environment concerns have no borders. That's one thing they learned, the oligarchies. If you're going to invest your money in things that transcends borders. Always. Telephone systems, communication systems, networks, etc. And where are they putting their money? In high technology.
And promoting the ecological movements.
Absolutely. Now, there are some, and this is the interesting part, there are some of the old radicals who are taking over the ecology movement as a means of expressing the older socialist views.
You mean radical people or radical oligarchs?
Radical people.
Yeah.
These get frozen out. No funds. They make noise, but they do not bring back socialism through ecologies.
That would be where LaRouche is erroneous a bit. He sees the oligarchs supporting the ecological movements, leading to maybe a global utopian socialistic world government. That's not exactly what you're saying here.
No. Socialism, as in communalism, fits. Socialism as communism is over, complete, and
bureaucratic.
Too centralized.
Yeah.
Too bureaucratic. Yes. Now, the oligarchies themselves have learned one thing. Keep hidden.
Keep what?
Keep hidden. It does not matter who gets the credit. Now, if you were in an oligarchy, you would, by flexing your muscles, realizing that the old style of munitions, payments, support, investments, is no longer useful. It once was, in which they invested heavily. But where is Krupp now?
I don't know where he is.
Virtually moribund.
Oh, I see, yeah.
As far as the munitions supplier,
yeah,
etc. The oligarchies move very heavily into those countries that have just switched from centralized bureaucracies to more interactive systems.
New York.
Eastern Europe.
You see this article I have here? Or do I read it to you?
The title, please.
New European Tectonics Recall Austro-Hungarian Empire. And it's about certain groups wanting Habsburg to run, I think, in the Hungarian election. But it's about the rise of the monarchical families like Otto von Habsburg.
Yes.
But those are friends.
They're very much a friend. As Prince Michael in Romania.
Right. How do these people remain invisible? Are they well active in the jet set?
Yeah, some are, some are not. If you look at the Knights of Malta, who was a member of the Knights of Malta?
Well, the head of it now is a monk, or was a monk. I mean, that's very antisocial or not very visible, maybe involved in charitable things, but they don't look the traditional stereotype of power and might, right? Or
exactly.
Posing their presence.
Exactly. One of the things the oligarchies learned is do not display your wealth.
But what do they do it for? What are they preserving? Why do they have to preserve their, whatever they, I mean, what do they get out of it?
Essentially, it was to preserve Christianity. Essentially. Realize that what these churchmen saw was the rise of Jews as having influence through wealth. And they were constrained against this by church law.
Yeah.
So therefore, that's why the church was petitioned, and that is why the church was forced into changing this concept of interest and usury. And that's why it was necessary to give you that somewhat simple history lesson. Now, Christianity, as expressed in the 14th and 15th centuries, no longer is suitable or useful or able to be promulgated in the 20th century, because the 14th century required an ignorant populace. Realize you had three major groups: the princes, the popes, and the people. And the people were told that the more that you work and hard and suffer, the more you would have your position guaranteed in heaven. And it was believed. And people worked very, very hard for the afterlife. Try selling that now.
Right, that doesn't work now.
Does not. So, what is the reward for working hard?
Pleasure?
Material goods. You got it. Work used to be shifted from the afterlife to retirement. Now it's working further down in the life. That work hard and you can have the results of your labor. Now.
Yeah.
Or you can owe for it. That is one way to keep people in a modicum of manipulation. Make sure that they owe. But the realize is the oligarchies were there and designed to maintain what they saw as the crumbling of Christianity. Now, of course, that's changed.
I mean, they saw that when? In the 1900s?
They saw that in the 1400s.
Right. And they held it up. They held it together?
They held it together.
Had to be more secret about it.
But... Well, they held it together, but they were the Christian societies.
Yeah.
Now, look at the Masons. What do the Masons promote more than any?
Charity? They promote brotherhood, supposedly.
That is one of the most important parts, is the brotherhood of like-minded men. The reason that the church was against the Masons, as they were against other societies, is that they could be used to form oligarchies. Wars were fought against oligarchies. Many popular wars were not done for the reasons that people believed. It was done to stamp out oligarchies.
Right.
And some of them were successful. So therefore, the number of oligarchies had decreased. And with that economic situation, they coasted through the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. But the rise of the oligarchy is now spawning more oligarchies, more secret groups.
To fight against them?
No, to get a part of the action.
We have quick well, nouveau riche groups.
Yes. So therefore, look for siphoning of funds that go into secret pockets. Expect across the next several years that certain of these smaller, inept oligarchies would be exposed.
Yeah, you mean secret societies?
Yes.
They don't have the lineage of the traditional ones or the really powerful ones.
No.
Now, secret societies is a fad.
Secret societies in those days, in the 1400s, were absolutely necessary. Now is a fad.
Yeah, today is a fad. Mm-hmm. Carry on then. Want me to say something or...
No, please continue.
So you're saying, you know, why for the siphoning? What about the principal group in Calgary or the Cadillac Fairview siphoning of funds in 82 in Toronto? Those examples of that?
Very much so.
And, this is what Mae Brussels talked about. She felt that they were being siphoned off to old Nazi groups and that, but not necessarily there.
No, not Nazi
but
groups.
But to do business today, you have to be kind of in the know, and it's who you know, not what you know, right?
Yes.
So you form little secrets.
Yes.
And networking.
And networking.
Networking is the popular version of secret society.
Exactly.
So that's natural.
That is more open.
Yeah.
But certain of the older oligarchies, they are very firmly entrenched. Certain companies that could not be able to monies loaned through banks make, quote, international loans, unquote.
To other people?
To other people,
That's the secret society there.
Yes.
Now you were talking, what is their, since the Christianity can't be preserved, what are they preserving now? What's their role since even global is not a standard?
It is, we would suggest, a standard more than, but this is the greater problem with oligarchies. They do not have a principle around which they're to turn.
Yeah, like what, they're useless.
It would appear from that perspective of trying to preserve a certain character of life.
Right. The Christian ideal or supposed concept.
Or defend against Jewish banking families. Because
many people aren't Jewish, don't act like the traditional Jewish way.
Exactly.
Yeah, the modern cosmopolitan citizen, right?
Yes.
So what are they preserving and what are they preserving other than their own ego or comfort?
A better world. That is what they're looking for. A better world. Realize that certain of these older catches have considerable amount of experience across the past 600 years. And it's all recorded. All of their investments, the ones that turned well, the ones that soured, and they're able to take a good look at this. They can see the rise and fall of industry. They can see the rise and fall of countries, and they can see the reasons behind it. They can see that if you're going to put in this particular type of systemology, then within a certain number of years it will do this, and another certain number of years it will do that, and is extremely predictable.
Well, they have good knowledge on world management levels.
Exactly.
So they know that.
Yes.
Well, they should take over and run the world government, they feel.
That is what they're aiming for, is world government.
A better world here.
A better world here.
In other words, not heaven after life. Now they will manage the heaven that they will bring to the people.
That is what they want. So therefore, they have an ideal. For a while, not. But now, in the 90s, an ideal.
Now that the world isn't going to blow up kind of thing. We're past the nuclear nightmare or the end of the world scenario, which is the old Christian apocalypse, right?
Yes.
So, okay, we're going to be here. Now make it a better world.
Yes.
So they have a role for themselves.
Yes.
Which, now, is there anything wrong with this? What should we be skeptical about, or should we?
It is not so much skeptical as to... Can one finance nirvana? No, one can only create environments in which people change, in which then they can reach nirvana. So therefore, it is a people investment thing. The oligarchies now move more to people investment.
In other words, they want the only validity they have is to give.
The validity they have is knowing where to give.
Based on their economic expertise.
Yes.
They are the magicians of money. They know that they want to maintain their monopoly on that knowledge. They think they're justified, and they will maintain it.
Yes.
Well, could you have a revolution against them? Not under electrical conditions, could you?
Not exactly. The quickest way to destroy a country, easily, is remove one of its largest economic situations. Here is how to destroy... pick a country. Choose any country.
Canada.
Cause a disturbance that would bring down... its major industry. What is Canada's major industry? Beyond that.
Wheat?
No. Surprisingly small wheat. Appear substantial funds, but there are billions of dollars spent in this country in yet another industry. Not food.
Mining stuff?
Not mining. Not even offices. Tourism. billions of dollars are spent on tourism. Some countries, noticeably Mexico, cannot exist without tourism. Cannot. Subtract tourism, the country falls. The biggest threat that an oligarchy can put to a country is, if you do not play ball, we will so cause it that the publicity that comes from your country will be such that people will hesitate to come.
Well, it seems to me then that money, that gold, is an eternal standard for this dimension. I mean... They're experts in money and gold. As long as we have that medium, that reference point, I mean, you know, how do they have this cult? They're going to take the money away. Well, we got other money, haven't we? You know, how do they control? Does my question make sense?
Yes. How much money is a lot?
What you need.
More than you need.
More than you need. And what if you have an organization that will always supply you more than you need? But what if they withdraw? That is how an oligarchy controls, by threatening to withdraw.
Well, couldn't regions have their own little local currency and separate from that international? Or
no.
Can't do that.
No, not now. In the 1400s, each town had its own currency, which was backed by the value of the town. So therefore, the oligarchies would invest in towns. They would invest in Venice. Vast holdings. Now, if you would take the monarchy in England, how many acres of downtown Vancouver are owned by the royal family?
Probably a lot.
Considerable.
But they are front for the secret Christian family.
They are the result of an oligarchy that was that particular group called British monarchy. That is now an oligarchy that is not as hidden as most.
Yeah. But is there other people involved besides the immediate royal family? Secret, I don't know, members?
The royal family, we assure you, is headed by a very competent individual. But not every member of the royal family is in on this because they do not have the training of it.
Who's that? Who is the person who...
Well, the Queen herself, who knows that there is a substantial amount of money that is invested by royalty around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But realize that the role of the oligarchy was taken over by governments when they began investing around the world. Now it is becoming problematic. The Soviet Union, for instance, well, its foreign aid is going to be cut by 80% by the end of this year.
Foreign aid given to it?
No, that it would give to others.
Is this why it had to recognize the Pope? Aligning with those international oligarchic secrets?
Now you're beginning to see it.
You see, this is biblical. The Pope, well, some fundamentalists and Herbert W. Armstrong say that the Antichrist will be the Pope, you know, because we will evolve to that point. We will implode.
We would not phrase it in those words. We would say that the Italian oligarchies very quietly, very surreptitiously have been investing in a considerable advances in chemicals. Many companies do not know who owns their stock. But they know the name, but they do not know who is that is fronted.
Yeah.
Realize the oligarchies are doing this and know that if they're exposed, they would fall.
Okay.
So, therefore, where is Q2 now? Where is it?
Who?
P2.
It's still powerful in Italy.
Yes, but how much has been said about it in the past while?
Not much, no. So they were exposed?
Briefly. There was, we assure you, and this is for your ears only, a Pope murdered because he was going to open the doors on how his finance ministers were interacting with P2 and how much money had been moved and how much money had been lent. It ended partially with one individual hanging himself from a bridge in England.
Right. Dr. Peter said Pope John Paul I was murdered. He was right there.
Yes.
Now, the book In God's Name claims that, and that, so therefore that book's true.
Yes. Why would a healthy man die but for the fact that he said he was going to blow the whistle?
Right, and that is, I know he did say that. Now, this comes into an interesting character named Licio, the key man in the P2 on the public level. He now is back in Italy. I don't know his jail situation. He's in and out of jail, or he's pardoned, or he's allowed to function, but he wants to run for European Parliament. A guy like that, who probably was instrumental in organizing the murder of Pope John Paul I, and if you want to tell me, I won't broadcast, but he was involved, right?
Yes.
Licio Gelli. He still has that clout that he can walk around in the public and run for Parliament.
Yes.
That's what we're talking about, right?
Yes.
And he represents the secret team.
Yes, he does indeed.
Now, is this something, you know, these people, I don't know if they're a threat or not. I mean,
realize that they themselves are fractionalized. They're not all in concerted effort or concerted direction. Some still hold on to the idea that they're Christ's shield, that they are there to maintain the purity of Christianity,
yeah,
as practiced in the 14th, 15th, 16th centuries.
In that sense, of the Antichrist.
In that, any changes in Christianity would be most severely, severely frowned upon. And in that way, control the church, that the church itself must not change to maintain the purity.
Do the American bishops who want to, you know, liberalize the Catholic Church in the States a little more, do they know what they're up against in terms of the ferocity and murderousness of Gelli and those kind of people?
No.
They don't know that.
No. Not totally unknowing, but they believe that they're untouchable. And that is a big mistake.
The American bishops believe the Gellis and the Italian Catholics are untouchable?
They believe themselves untouchable.
Oh, that they could be murdered.
Now, that they could not be murdered. Why would you murder an American bishop?
Right, that they could not be murdered.
Yes.
That's where they're naive. It could come to push comes to shove kind of thing.
And push comes to shove. Those that want to institute change would receive the axe. Now, if, and this is not a high probability, but it's a matter of if the Catholic Church said to the American bishops, you are all excommunicated, then what would happen? Then the American bishops would form the American Catholic Church.
Yeah.
That would be a disaster. So enough line has to be played out, enough leeway given. But at the same time, look at the consistency of the Pope himself. He and also his Dutch bishops. What the oligarchies are beginning to realize among their own theologians, that as the world changes so rapidly, that many of these institutions that they're supporting and propping up are themselves dividing for exactly the same reason that there was a Berlin Wall and that there was a decay in the decline of the economy of Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
Because something was trying to be maintained that was going rapidly out of date. So therefore, look to changes in the Catholic Church that would show a change in certain of the basic tenets of Catholicism. But not too much.
You see, a person, the average citizen wants to, many people, human nature, want to have ambition. They have ambition. They want to do something momentous that they will get credit for. Now, let's say many people want to bring heaven to earth. Now, the oligarchy's got the monopoly on that, and they're going to do it. Is this an identity crisis for the citizen, that he will not be the person? And what's funny is the oligarchies don't get credit for publicly. They're not known. You see, like, this is what's sort of absurd. We've got heaven on earth coming technologically with fusion energy. The Catholic Church and their dogma is irrelevant to most people's lives. Yet people want identity, don't they? They want social identity.
Yes.
I'm trying to express a very complex paradoxical situation.
Yes, but that is, you're looking at the clean, bright side. Now, there is the dark side of this. Give a picture of Christ. Describe Christ. How does Christ look?
Well, there's the traditional image.
Yes. And what is the traditional image?
Long, flowing, bright, peaceful, loving person.
And what color is his hair?
Usually brown, isn't it?
And what color is his skin?
White, but he wasn't white.
Who's a Mediterranean Jew?
Well, the dark side is the other... Yeah, we're just talking the Western oligarchies here, aren't we?
No, we're talking the Western oligarchies, which are, we assure you, the most powerful. Do not look at the Chinese government as powerful, but look at Japan's oligarchies are certain of the secret societies, the Tongs. These are very powerful. Now, distancing this for a moment, because that's more into the later 21st century.
Just before you go, we're retrieving the battle that originally happened with the rise of the Arabs in the Middle Ages.
Yes, you see. See the parallels?
Yeah.
Look for the parallels. Now, to the person who wants to bring heaven on earth, heaven is populated by white angels. Not black.
Yeah, there's not even a question of being ambitious and getting credit. The white, so this is why they want to wipe out the Africans.
They want to diminish. Because if you look at the 14th century heaven, 15th century heaven, you will see that not once is there a mention of an Arab, a Jew, Negro, an Asian, Hottentot. None of these inhabited Christian heaven. Even though there were the Crusades, and even though there were the missionaries, and even though the missionaries talked of conversion to Christianity so that they would be able to reach heaven, never was it expected that this converted ex-heathen would ever reach heaven, because he was not a stereotyped European.
So the dark side is a racial problem.
The dark side is a racial problem.
And that's deep in people.
It is also deep in where they would invest.
Yeah.
And that they would invest in certain groups that would continue this. Just as certain of the oligarchies put their money into the Nazi Party.
Yeah. This is exactly what LaRouche just said in his writings, that the Western oligarchy, the secret world government, so to speak, in influence, are ultimately Anglo-Saxon racists.
Yes.
And he offers himself to change that, but how are we going to change that?
The change happens because the oligarchies are basing themselves, and they're not fools, but they realize what happened is that not included in this plan of heaven was a country called Spain. Spain tried to get in the good graces of certain of the oligarchies by taking another route.
When was that?
In 1493, expelled all the Jews in the country.
Yeah.
Took over and tried to find found an oligarchy. Never happened. Oligarchies moved in. Now Spain is becoming a more prosperous country, but still not very prosperous. As a country's prosperity increases, then there is less reason to eradicate it from the plan. The only opportunity, and we may sound somewhat radical in this, but the only opportunity for Africa itself is to make this economically viable.
Make what economically viable?
Itself.
Itself.
Now, the question now, though, you have the white-dominated United Nations advocating ecological development or ecological control, sustainable development, and in the third world, and the black races are fully aware of this as a threat to their getting into the door of prosperity.
Exactly.
So we're on the edge of a real problem.
We would suggest on the edge of a severe problem.
Which then goes back into the Bible and the world goes to war, kind of thing. You know, the revelation, the prediction.
Yes. Realize that certain of the oligarchies believe that the Armageddon is the fight between the white and black peoples.
Yeah.
And they are convinced that it'll happen. They say that the signs are already there. The Jews have returned to Israel.
Well, is this why Habsburg funds the Worldwide Church of God, which is a very prominent fundamentalist church? This is where I see Herb W. Armstrong, who doesn't ask for money. They give out all the literature for free, and Habsburg visits them. Is there a racist line in the Worldwide Church of God supported by the European white oligarchy?
A substantial line.
Substantial what?
A substantial line.
Racial
line. Yeah, right. There is. So that's why Herbert Armstrong is recognized by the oligarchies all around the world. He's given red carpet for these people.
And where is his funding coming from?
Right. From the Queen?
It came from many oligarchies. Because they understand this. That is the dark part of this.
Does Prince Charles know this? Is Prince Charles a racist? Would he consider himself a racist?
No. We would suggest that he's European-born and brought up with the belief that the European is advanced to the African. Which does not say that he's racist. Would say that he is a logical racist, not a redneck racist.
Logical.
Approximately 2 minutes.
How would he ever? This has been quite a sermon or lecture or information you've given us, Evergreens. How could you sum it up? Or where do you want? What do I do with this? Or what do you want to say about that? I mean, we've just now arrived at the dark side, at the problem here.
Yes.
Talk about what you can, in the time you have left, about that question.
Now, if you wanted to create dissension, how would you do it? You would very easily. If you want to cause problems, let's take South Africa, for instance. Setting aside certain oligarchies wanted to continue. Certain oligarchies wanted to change. Embargoes the countries. The best way to solve this is to raise the standard of living of Africans.
That's what Rouge says. That's basic economic development.
The basic economic development.
Being stopped.
So therefore, we would suggest, if you wish to push this, we would suggest that those who are in favor of economic sanctions to South Africa are those that would wish to continue the status quo.
And there's the black faction that wants that, and they refuse to recognize that disservice.
Mm. So therefore, if you want the economic rise of the African, then it is necessary to undo the embargoes. Now, de Klerk is making change, but have the embargoes been lifted? You see, embargoes placed, for whatever reason said they are there, they're still embargoes. Quickest way to destroy a country is to remove its attractiveness. South Africa has suffered considerably. China has lost billions of dollars because of tourists.
There's a conspiracy sense that the oligarchs are preserving, they're actively preserving the white race. And the white people go along with that, the average citizen, up to a point. There are millions of citizens who wouldn't want that. But the oligarchs can always count on 30% of redneck mentality to preserve the white race, right?
Yes.
Is this situation ever going to change?
It changes when it's realized, when it does not matter. And this is what is coming up, is it does not matter where the person was born, whether the person is male or female, whether the person is black, white, yellow, red, purple. It does not matter whether the person is Russian, American, Canadian, British, German, whatever. But is that person the right person for the job that's necessary to be done? That is where some, not all, but some of the oligarchies are reaching. What is called the universal state of man. Not a world without war. These are nice words. Not a world that is dedicated to peace. Nice words. But to go beyond the concept of war, beyond the concept of peace, and into the stage of, is that person over there the right person to do this job? See, if you would say that the United States is a democracy or a republic, would depend upon how many people have been voted into office. And when the Democrats are in power, the Republicans are not. But what if the Democrats need a person to run the State Department and the best person is a Republican? You see?
Yeah.
But they do not. It cue to party lines. The Canadian government recently expelled two individuals from caucus because they voted against the government line. Those two have guaranteed re-election. Not so true of those that caused them to leave. But your phrase is, this is Custer's last stand of certain institutional states. You're right. But all that remained at Custer's stand were two horses.
You said that in a previous reading that the Pope would be instrumental in a united Europe around the year 2020?
Yes, but that would be the last Pope. That would be the last Peter.
Really?
And his name will be Peter, and he will be the last one.
Will it be an Antichrist phenomenon?
No, no. It will be the...
They'll go willingly, so to speak? Retire willingly?
Let us ask you this question, then this must end. We have for you a gift. 500 very interesting gifts. Are you pleased or not pleased? You'd like to know what the gift is. Hula hoops. Thrown in as an extra special gift, 15 pet rocks. You see, out of fad, out of style. You see?
Yeah.
Gifts that are not gifts at all. Imagine for a moment a Catholic Church that has no power, no emphasis. Its supporters have gone in other directions. Where would it stand?
Well, still has the Vatican and the museum. It would become a museum.
Wonderful. And there is the Hermitage in the Soviet Union. A marvelous, magnificent museum. That's all it is. The only reason that the Vatican is the Vatican is because so many people look at it and say, ah, the Vatican. Why do not they say the same thing about a Howard Johnson's motel? Very different connotations. And this must end within the near future.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody. So unless there's any further comments, shall we end the session?
You can start your own oligarchy. It's easily done.
Oh.
Well, I think Caroline could do it. With Caroline's knowledge, she could help a lot of people.
Point is, it's a matter of forming a syndicate. That's another name for an oligarchy, is a syndicate. It's that you'd invest your money, but not for short-term gain. 50-year payout. Payout is to your grandchildren.
I satirized this on the radio with my Bob Dobbs and our secret Church of the Subgenius.
Yeah, yeah. And useful, too. And this must end.
Okay. So unless there's any further comments, shall we end the session?
Thanks.
Dear Lord, please enfold these entities in thy love and thy perfection. Amen. Please clear any negative influences from these entities now.
Damn.
Allow the body to become completely relaxed. Perform any healing which may need to be performed. Begin increasing the blood pressure to normal, naturally, and begin returning all other systems of the body to normal, naturally now.
Done.
And thank you for our session, and fairly well.
Well, we do thank you. To you all, God's blessing.
Thank you. And now I would like Michael to awaken, feeling completely refreshed, relaxed, and loved now.
Came out of that session seeing a group of men together, and I know it was around about 13-something, and they were saying that the tinsmiths and the metal workers were making a lot of money, and they weren't Christians. So therefore, they put a rule in that the tinsmiths and the metal workers had to be Christian in order to get the business. One of the ex-tinsmiths, and it caused a great deal of economic dislocation, but one of them said, let's use the Arab idea of lending money at interest, which is against Christianity. The Christians can't do it, but Arabs can. And we are, in essence, the Arabs in the area. And they began loaning money at interest and got rich enough that it attracted the view of an awful lot of Christian people who said, this is too good a business to let stand by. But so they literally went underground to do this. And they loaned money at interest contrary to the church. And when the church heard about it, the church was going to lean on them really heavy, and they just came back with the thing is, no, we have more money than you have. Don't lean on those who've got more money than you have. And they literally changed the ruling on usury. It became no longer usury, but a financial tool.
In terms of secret history, that's the greatest fucking thing you've ever heard. That's the most amazing fucking knowledge you're ever going to get on material level, up to RNA drops and what we're doing now. And that was done in April 1990. I did summaries of that. I did my Illuminati in the Media interview with Ted, whatever his name was, out in Arizona. It's a very good replay of that with details. But the point is that that is the most amazing thing you're ever going to hear. It clears up a lot of the mystery and conspiracy stuff.
Did you go to the Vatican to talk about cold fusion?
We went to the Vatican to deal with the fact that this history and those oligarchies that are going to rise in the 90s are now weak. The end of me has gone past them.
What does deal with it mean?
If you want to know why we are the Illuminati, then you understand this, and then you bring yourself up to the recent years, and you know that even the Catholic oligarchy and other oligarchies that were rising, re-rising, that they're weak now, then you see where we come in. But you need to know this first. You understand, you have to understand why I introduced Lady Di to Prince Charles. So the Prince Charles in 83 could start going around and reinvesting the oligarch money. They collapse 10 years later because the Android meme, the afterimage of it, it starts coming in. And it ain't been too cool to be a turn in taxes or a Prince Charles, Prince Diana for the last 20 years. But you had to wait 15 years or more of the afterimage, the Android meme, until 2008, 2009 to get to where we are. That's why you can say everything arrived on March 18th, 2009. That was the GOF beginning to create, non-physical.